This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's discussion is about autism. Today we're going to talk to the author of a great new book. It's entitled How to Prevent Autism, and it's by Dara Berger. Dara Berger has direct experience with this. Who better but a mom to write this book? But she also is currently working on a film about how to prevent chronic illness in children through her production company, Say It Out Loud Productions, which produces films on meaningful issues. So she is a communicator, for sure. She served as a board member and co-chair of the programming committee for the National Autism Association, New York Metro Chapter, for 6 years, and she's recently completed the Institute for Integrative Nutrition's Health Coach Certificate Program, which she hopes to leverage to help other families prevent chronic illness and autism in their children. So welcome to Intelligent Medicine. It's a pleasure having you on board.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's my pleasure. Well, so preventing autism, the title of the book is How to Prevent Autism. And this is a controversial proposition because we know that the incidence of autism is rising. You can share with us some stark statistics on that. But it seems like it's a lightning bolt out of the sky. And, there's, to paraphrase the old song, there's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear, but there's a rising incidence of autism. Some people attribute it to certain aspects of our Western lifestyles. So you believe that autism is something that where we can do early intervention, or even we can do prenatal prevention. So, and that's what the book is all about, right?
Absolutely. There is so much involved in what goes into before a child gets an autism diagnosis. I mean, many times there are so many soft signs that the pediatricians miss because, unfortunately, we look at all of these conditions, childhood conditions such as chronic constipation, reflux, as colic, as normal for a baby, and it's not normal. It actually means that something's going on that's brewing underneath, you know, in the gut with the immune system early on. And so the book is about trying to look, see these signs and treat them holistically before it snowballs into a greater condition such as autism.
Indeed. And you speak, of course, from direct experience. You have two kids, is that correct?
Yes, I have a 13-year-old boy, Dylan, who was diagnosed with autism about 11 years ago. Dylan did not have regressive autism in the way many children do. He was kind of catapulted into autism, I like to say, because he had a vaccine injury at 18 months to a Hib shot, and he unfortunately suffered two ischemic strokes.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I mean, so we're not even just overnight.
So I mean, some people, they say, oh, you know, ever since my kid got the vaccine, they seem to regress, they lost speech, or they seem to lose, eye contact. But it's a subtle thing, and critics of the anti-vaxxers will say, well, you know, correlation is not causation. It's, just because that happens around the time you get vaccines, it's typical for autism to develop around a year of age. Hence people associated with vaccines. But there's a very specific injury, a dramatic reaction, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's more common than most of us would like to believe, unfortunately. I can't tell you how many times on a playground I see a child who's drooling, or you notice the asymmetry in the face once you have experience with it, like I do. But, I think vaccines are, unfortunately, they're a trigger for many children. But again, there is stuff going on underneath that's kind of being ignored. And a lot of times people, you know, are treating all these symptoms with a prescription rather than getting to the root cause and treating it holistically. And so I think that's a huge problem.
Indeed. So what you did for the book is you went to some of the top experts in the field of autism, and you interviewed them, and the book is a compendium of discussions from doctors of excellence on the subject.
Absolutely. So my personal story is kind of what weaves everything together. But I interview 8 professionals in all areas of practicing medicine, scientists, doctors, nutritionists, a nurse, the physician's assistant. And, you know, I wanted to get everybody's perspective on autism. And, you know, it's a wealth of information and knowledge from some of the most passionate practitioners that are on the front lines every day trying to prevent autism in the siblings of children and recover those that are already affected.
So in undertaking a second pregnancy, you use some of the lessons that you learned in dealing with Dylan, your first child, to undertake a preventive program. How did that turn out? I mean, given that there is some genetic susceptibility to autism, I guess you were especially on alert.
Yes. So there are genetic predispositions, and I think a lot of times, as you know, people get confused with a genetic cause, a gene that causes autism, and these, we call them SNPs, the genetic predispositions. And I already knew from Dylan being diagnosed that I had a double copy of a very common one, the MTHFR. Many children with autism have that.
Yeah.
And so I already, and my husband had one of each copy of of the MTHFR.
MTHFR is, it's a gene which has to do with methylation. We've done entire podcasts on the subject of MTHFR. SNPs and polymorphisms, but can you briefly summarize why that could be problematic? It seems to be, it's not totally deterministic of an autistic outcome, but it just puts kids and pregnancies at higher risk.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, many women don't know you have a higher risk of miscarriage if you have an MTHFR genetic break that you're not treating with, you know, the right type of folate and other supplements. But what it is it makes it so your detoxification system doesn't work correctly. You don't get rid of toxins as quickly as the rest of the population. And that becomes a problem because once they start to build up, you know, they overwhelm your liver, all your organs. And that is what autism is known to be by many scientists and integrated physicians, which is this total load theory where your body keeps building up toxins. It can't get rid of it. And then all of a sudden, you know, it takes one last trigger, the straw that broke the camel's back, and the immune system basically implodes and the body and the brain cease to function properly anymore.
And that may be why so many kids receive all these vaccines and seem to be okay. And if they do population-wide studies, they generally try to reassure us that, nah, nothing to see here, folks, just move along. But maybe if they did studies on certain subsections on kids who have certain types of family histories or maybe a certain genetic makeup, that those kids might be the ones who are at higher risk for things going awry when they get a vaccine that stimulates their immune system, number one, but also may contain toxic elements, formaldehyde, mercury, preservatives, adjuvants, and so on.
Absolutely. So with my daughter, we knew we had these genetic breaks going in. So during my pregnancy, I was taking the right type of folate. I was working with an integrative physician and a nutritionist aside from my regular OB. And so we were very prepared. I did a natural childbirth. I didn't want any interventions in the hospital. I didn't want the vitamin K shot. I gave it orally instead. I did not want any vaccines in the hospital. So, and then when she came home and I wasn't able to breastfeed fully, I supplemented with made baby formula by the Weston A. Price Foundation, and I put supplements in from day one, vitamin D, probiotics, fish oil, B12, you name it. So everything was the knowledge I had from Dylan.
Indeed. And, you know, one element that seems to be of critical importance, and I'm pretty sure you've seen this already because this is an article that's made a big splash recently. A study came out, autism symptoms alleviated with fecal microbiota transplantation. In other words, changing the microbiome in a rather radical way. I'm not suggesting that every kid with autism automatically get a fecal transplant. That's a little, out there. But it's a dramatic study that suggests that the microbiome can shape behavior and can shape brain development.
Absolutely. I mean, I have considered a fecal transplant many times. The issue is finding the right donor.
Yes.
I don't want to use a stranger.
It's a little
hit or
miss.
You have to make sure that the donor is really healthy and going to transfer the right microbiome. But that is something many of us parents are working so hard to recover our children. We work on the microbiome night and day. I mean, and it's very difficult to repair it once it's been damaged. It doesn't mean it can't be done, but it takes a long time. It's
yeah.
a slow process.
It's not simply a matter of just taking a probiotic. You know, just
no,
that
it's
alone
not.
Is not going to turn the corner. However, another study recently showed that kids who get a certain type of probiotic, I think it was Lactobacillus plantarum, were less likely to get infections. And in fact, they're very serious life-threatening infections that children get, which is a type of enterocolitis that can be devastating. And when they were given this probiotic, the incidence of that was dramatically reduced.
No, it's amazing. And I've seen just with my own son, I've brought him so far. He's not completely recovered. We've recovered a lot of his, we've recovered his speech from the stroke, which was incredible. I mean, some of the most seasoned speech therapists that we, you know, dealt with never thought he was going to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was 7 years without speech. And he's constantly getting better. I mean, at first it was kind of like watching an iceberg move. It was really slow. You barely could see anything. But then once the healing process begins, he's made tremendous progress.
Well, that's exciting because there's sort of fatalistic sometimes about the progress that can be made with autism. Most of it is centered around behavioral interventions, which admittedly are important. But here we're talking about not ABA, which is a form of therapy, intensive speech and language and socialization therapy. But we're talking about biological therapies, therapies which involve vitamins, supplements, diet modification, detoxification, and so on.
Yes, unfortunately, there's so much resistance to the idea that autism is preventable and treatable, and also it's still looked at like a psychological disorder rather than what it really is, which is there are underlying conditions going on in the body. There's immune dysfunction, there's, you know, gut dysbiosis, there's neuroinflammation, all kinds of things going on, and that's the thing that I think people don't understand, and I'm trying to spread the word that there is so much you can do. I mean, when Dylan was diagnosed 11 years ago by a neurologist, I got the no, there's no hope, there's no cure speech from that neurologist that day. I mean, and thank God I didn't listen to him. I got myself to Dr. Nancy O'Hara, a wonderful integrative physician, and we got going right away, you know, on a protocol. And it was in that very first visit that she said to me that I needed to clean out before I had another child.
Indeed. Well, okay, so let's go back and take a look at, were there any antecedents that were avoidable or correctable around your prenatal experience with Dylan and his early life experience that might have rendered him less susceptible to the adverse effects of the vaccine? We generally think of vaccines as maybe the straw that breaks the camel's back, not the full-blown instigator of problems.
Right. So when I talk a lot in my book in the first three chapters of everything that went wrong with Dylan that I could see, because when you go to these functional medicine doctors, you fill out like a 30-page questionnaire. They want to know everything that went on so they could try to figure out for that individual child what might have been their contributors, because that information helps them choose what recovery protocol they're going to give you. So with Dylan, the first thing is I did IVF. I have no idea what those hormones or, you get a container and you give yourself the shots, but there has to be some kind of preservative in there because you keep sticking the same needle in. And I always wonder, was there mercury in that?
Mm-hmm.
What was in that? So IVF right there. And also, I was very sick at the time. I had multiple chemical sensitivities from my own tetanus vaccine reaction, and I had mercury poisoning from a mercury filling that was removed all in the couple of years before I got pregnant with Dylan. And so I didn't know at the time I wasn't healthy enough to get pregnant. And I spent 3 years trying to get pregnant. We finally did IVF, and it worked. But again, I was very sick with allergies during my whole pregnancy, and that raises the risk of autoimmune in my own child, the fact that I was so sick. I had undiagnosed food allergies. And then once Dylan was born, he was very healthy. He was born 5.5 weeks early, but he had an Apgar of 8 and 9, and they sent us home after 36 hours. I mean, he really was the picture of health. But I did start to notice when I started to vaccinate him, and I was on a very alternative, slow schedule. I mean, first of all, we were giving him store-bought formula.
Mm-hmm.
And right there, there's so many chemicals and preservatives, I can't even pronounce them, let alone know what any of them are. And if I can't figure it out, how is his little body supposed to digest and figure out what to do with them? So right there, that's another contributor to me. And then when we started to vaccinate him, we started to see him spit up large chunks of formula, which is an overt sign of food allergy.
Right.
Which again, a pediatrician, didn't have any awareness about and didn't notice it. And then he started to get a relentless yeast rash around his penis.
Wow.
Again, given some kind of prescription and it would never go away. Another sign that something was going wrong in his immune system and his digestive tract. And then after that, it was eczema, which is already you're going into the sort of autoimmune area where the immune system's definitely off track. And those children shouldn't be vaccinated. I mean, 20, 30 years ago, they wouldn't vaccinate a child that had eczema because they knew the immune system is not acting properly. So there were a lot of these signs, and I just kept getting met with a prescription or ignoring it rather than treating the holistic cause. And with my daughter, when I started to see the signs, because she had eczema, she had food allergies, all the same things as Dylan, but it never snowballed because each time I was working on her gut and immune system from day one, and then any time I saw the signs, I worked a little bit harder.
Were antibiotics administered in early life? Or, some kids these days even get these powerful acid-blocking medications because they have reflux. It used to be thought, kids have a little colic. Now they get powerful drugs to suppress the symptoms of reflux.
Yes, I did have antibiotics at a critical time in his development, about 10 and a half weeks. I had a tooth infection, but the worst one to me was there was a medical error during my pregnancy where the OB did not check my urine, and I was symptomatic, and I left the office thinking I'm fine, and within a week or two, I wound up on the hospital, premature labor, due to an undiagnosed urinary tract infection.
Wow.
I was on IV antibiotics, which totally wiped out my microbiome. That's like having a child be born by C-section, which is another risk I talk about in my book. And had I known that that was a risk, I could have loaded up on probiotics. I could have done a lot of things differently.
Indeed. So you talk to a variety of luminaries in the field. Can you discuss some of the people that you interviewed? Sid Baker, of course, who's been really been doing this. I've been following him ever since the beginning of my medical career. He's probably been doing this for 50 years. He's a pediatrician from Yale, who has contributed amazing insights into our understanding of, not just kids, but, adults with complex disorders. What does he have to say?
Absolutely. He talks a lot about, he has a chapter of what is autism, and he basically goes through what are the biggest contributors. He mentions vaccines, he mentions antibiotics, he mentions being born by C-section, all the things we're talking about, and he really explains this total load theory of how this occurs and how almost all disease, is caused by the same underlying things. And he's like the grandfather of autism. He was the one who actually prescribed a certain type of therapy called helminthic therapy, which is that's the one that my son restored his speech. I mean, within a couple of weeks, right away, we noticed a huge difference. And yeah, he would never have gotten his speech back, I believe, if it weren't for that therapy.
Okay, let's keep our audience in suspense because they know that we divide these podcasts into two parts. Helminthic therapy. Going back to my biology background, helminth is a fancy zoological word for worms. That is an intriguing angle on prevention and treatment of autism. So let's tackle that when we return in part two with today's guest. She's Dara Berger, and she's written a great compendium, How to Prevent Autism, her own personal experiences, and then she's interviewed a variety of expert medical professionals who deal with this problem and who are highly innovative in their approaches. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.